Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Night was the second Republican debate. Oh, I should probably introduce myself. I am your host, Mark Levine. Sometimes I forget to say that. Anyway, last night was the second Republican debate for president, and I think it led to some things that might do some interesting changes in the race. I actually wonder if Donald Trump has peaked. He's very good at about an hour show. And I say show because, well, he is the reality show expert. But I think going into hours two and three, well, the Donald got tired. He kind of used up his storehouse of quips and didn't have much to say. Now, I should say that if you only watched the first hour, and many people probably did, it did get to be a tiring debate, you might think he won the debate. But I would say that the clear winner of the debate, in my mind, and of course I'm a Democrat, and I'm not saying this based on her policies, to be sure. I'm just basing it on performance. I would say Carly Fiorina won the debate. And in fact, I think her strongest point in the debate, as usual, these debates are won based on style, not based on policy. And when Donald Trump attacked her for her looks, I think what it did, this is clip five, actually, and Andrew, I want to thank you. Andrew Tomedy has been working to pull all these clips for me. What I think she shows is that his sexism, Donald Trump's sexism, just isn't working. And frankly, I don't think he got the joke. I don't think Donald Trump gets it. And maybe that's why he appeals to a certain chauvinist male. But the interesting thing is that Carly Fiorina has very much run on the idea that you shouldn't vote for her just because she's a woman, which, of course, is the right way to run for office. That's not the reason someone should vote for someone. They should, based on the policies. I like Hillary Clinton and I like Elizabeth Warren, not because they're women, but because I think they're very strong leaders. And I'd be happy to see either one of them as my president. In any case, many of you know, well, let's play the clip and we'll go from there. I think many of you know what Donald Trump said about Carly Fiorina, and her response was fascinating. Let's play the clip. Bye.
Ms. Fiorina, I do want to ask you about this. In an interview last week in Rolling Stone magazine, Donald Trump said the following about you. Quote, "Look at that face. Would anyone vote for that? Can you imagine that, the face of our next president?" Mr. Trump later said he was talking about your persona, not your appearance. Please feel free to respond what you think about his persona.
You know, it's interesting to me. Mr. Trump said that he heard Mr. Bush very clearly and what Mr. Bush said. I think women all over this country heard very clearly what Mr. Trump said.
Quite a zinger, and it got quite a large amount of applause. And I don't know if you have, Andrew, and just tell me you don't if you don't, what Donald Trump responded to when she said that. Do you have that too, Andrew, or you don't?
Unfortunately, I don't.
Okay. Well, after she said that, and let's recall the setup here, because this is where Donald Trump basically did criticize her looks. He's been criticizing everyone's looks. I have to say he's not particularly sexist about that. He accused Rand Paul of being short. Well, Rand Paul is shorter than the other candidates on stage, but the relevance of that, not quite sure. He basically accused Carly Fiorina of being ugly. He's accused other women of being fat. But as I said, it's not limited to women. In any case, Carly Fiorina definitely took that and made it into a sexist statement. And then, if you were wondering whether Donald Trump was just insulting everyone or was being sexist, his response was fascinating. He responded by saying, basically, "Carly, I happen to think you're a beautiful woman and have a beautiful face." Now, that was exactly the wrong response. Think about why that was the wrong response. the argument is not, oh, you called Carly Fiorina ugly, and she's not ugly, and we're going to have a debate on her looks. The argument is that people's looks shouldn't matter if they're president of the United States. You don't mock someone for their looks. And so by saying, oh, you're really beautiful, Carly Fiorina, he's precisely saying that you shouldn't take her seriously as well, as a politician or as a candidate for president or as a leader, and that women should be judged based on their looks, not based on their qualities for leadership. He was fascinatingly tone deaf on that one. He appeared to actually back down from his comment, right? So he's not the unapologetic Mr. Trump that has gotten a lot of support from people who like that kind of insulting behavior. At the same time, he certainly didn't appeal to any women by saying she was pretty. Whether Carly Fiorina is a good-looking person or not really is irrelevant. Maybe if you're a late-night talk show host, maybe if you're a comedy host, you might mock someone's looks. It's very easy to mock Donald Trump's hair and other characteristics of the candidates. But the point is that she should be taken seriously. And I think by going after him for him mocking her, and to be fair, the moderator, Jake Tapper, certainly set him up for that. So, but by doing that, she shows that he wasn't someone to be taken seriously. And in fact, there was another comment where he attacks Rand Paul, and Rand Paul hits him back. This is the clip number 10. Rand Paul hits him back on a pretty similar idea. Trump, by the way, says he hadn't complained about Rand Paul's appearance. Actually, he has. In one clip, he said something like, "I had him up to here," and he pointed to his armpit because Rand Paul is somewhat short. Let's play this exchange between Donald Trump and Rand Paul.
Mr. Trump?
Well, first of all, Rand Paul shouldn't even be on this stage. He's number 11. He's got 1% in the polls, and how he got up here, there's far too many people. Anyway, as far as temperament, I think I have a great temperament. I built a phenomenal business with incredible, iconic assets, one of the really, truly great real estate businesses. And I may be an entertainer because I've had tremendous success with number one bestsellers all over the place, with The Apprentice and everything else I've done. But I will tell you this, what I am far and away greater than an entertainer is a businessman, and that's the kind of mindset this country needs to bring it back, because we owe $19 trillion right now, $19 trillion, and you need this kind of thinking to bring our country back. And believe me, my temperament is very good, very calm, but we will be respected outside of this country. We are not respected now.
Mr. Senator Paul, your name has been invoked.
I kind of have to laugh when I think of, sounds like a non-sequitur. He was asked whether or not he would be capable and it would be in good hands to be in charge of the nuclear weapons, and all of a sudden there's a sideways attack at me. I think that really goes to really the judgment. Do we want someone with that kind of character, that kind of careless language, to be negotiating with Putin? Do we want someone like that to be negotiating with Iran? I think really there's a sophomore quality that is entertaining about Mr. Trump. But I am worried. I'm very concerned about him, having him in charge of the nuclear weapons, because I think his response, his visceral response to attack people on their appearance, short, tall, fat, ugly, my goodness, that happened in junior high. Are we not way above that? And would we not all be worried to have someone like that in charge of the nuclear arsenal?
Mr. Trump?
I never attacked him on his look, and believe me, there's plenty of subject matter right there that I can tell you.
But Jake,
I want to give Mr. Trump.
So there you go, right? Classic Donald Trump. I never attacked him on his appearance, but he's a very unappealing. Whatever, he's ugly. It is very junior high. It is very sophomoric. I disagree with a lot of things that Rand Paul says, but the basic idea that you shouldn't win a campaign based on insulting someone else's looks, that would seem to be pretty obvious. One of the reasons why I think Carly Fiorina did so well is because she didn't play any of those games. She went right and basically showed these silly attacks for what they were, and frankly came away with a lot of strong things that she said. I do, however, and don't get me wrong, I think she's going to rise in the polls. I think she's going to do better based on this debate. I think Donald Trump will do less well based on this debate. I don't know that he's going to descend fast. If I had to predict, I think his polls may decline slightly. I think he's sort of reached a certain level. I don't know that he can go any higher. But one thing, though, that I found fascinating is I think Carly Fiorina is a very weak candidate, not because of her debate performance. I think it was a very good debate performance. But remember, Carly Fiorina has run for office before. She ran for Senator of California, and she did so in 2010, which was a year when Republicans did very well. It was the big change. When we lost Congress, they lost the House, they lost state houses throughout the country. It was a Republican wave election, and she still didn't beat a relatively liberal senator, Barbara Boxer. And one of the reasons she didn't win was not, I mean, part of it, obviously, California is a blue state, but also because she did such a terrible job in the one thing she's famous for, and that's running Hewlett-Packard. I mean, Carly Fiorina, why do we know her name? Why is she running for office? She hasn't won office before. She ran, as I said, once for senator and lost. She's famous because she's a CEO. She's a chief executive officer of a major American corporation, Hewlett-Packard. But she didn't do a very good job. In fact, she did such a lousy job that she was fired for it. So as much as she presents herself well on stage, and as I said, I think she was the winner of last night's debate. When you get to the facts of Carly Fiorina, she's not a very good leader at the one thing she's running on, apart from being a woman, and that is how well she was a CEO at Hewlett-Packard. In clip number two, the one time that Donald Trump actually lays a hand on Carly Fiorina, she has to change the topic really quickly, because people understood or would understand that she really messed up Hewlett-Packard. Let's play that clip.
All right, Senator Paul, thank you so much. Let's turn to a new topic. We've received a lot of questions on social media about the economy and about jobs. We have two CEOs on stage right now. Ms. Fiorina, you were CEO of Hewlett-Packard. Donald Trump says you, quote, ran HP into the ground. You laid off tens of thousands of people. You got viciously fired. For voters looking to somebody with private sector experience to create American jobs, why should they pick you and not Donald Trump?
I led Hewlett-Packard through a very difficult time, the worst technology recession in 25 years. The NASDAQ stock index fell 80%. It took 15 years for the stock index to recover. We had very strong competitors who literally went out of business and lost all of their jobs in the process, despite those difficult times. We doubled the size of the company. We quadrupled its top line growth rate. We quadrupled its cash flow. We tripled its rate of innovation. Yes, we had to make tough choices. And in doing so, we saved 80,000 jobs, went on to grow to 160,000 jobs, and now Hewlett-Packard is almost 300,000 jobs. We went from lagging behind to leading in every product category and every market segment. We must lead in this nation again, and some tough calls are going to be required. But as for the firing, I have been very honest about this from the day it happened. When you challenge the status quo, you make enemies. I made a few. Steve Jobs told me that when he called me the day I was fired to say, hey, been there, done that twice. It's also true that the man that led my firing, Tom Perkins, just
Thank
took
you,
out
Governor.
A full-page ad in the New York Times to say he was wrong, I was right,
Thank
I was
you.
A terrific CEO, the board was dysfunctional, and he thinks I will make a magnificent president
you,
of the
Fiorina.
United States.
Well, Mr. Trump, why would you be better at creating jobs than Carly Fiorina?
Well, let me just explain. The head of the Yale Business School, Jeffrey Sonnenfeld, wrote a paper recently, one of the worst tenures for a CEO that he has ever seen, ranked one of the top 20 in the history of business. The company is a disaster and continues to be a disaster. They still haven't recovered. In fact, today on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, they fired another 25 or 30,000 people saying we still haven't recovered from the catastrophe. When Carly says the revenues went up, that's because she bought Compaq. It was a terrible deal, and it really led to the destruction of the company. Now, one other company before that was Lucent. Carly was at Lucent before that. And Lucent turned out to be a catastrophe also. So I only say this. She can't run any of my companies. That I can tell you.
Ms. Fiorina, I want to give you a chance to respond.
Jeffrey Sonnenfeld is a well-known Clintonite and honestly had it out for me from the moment that I arrived at Hewlett-Packard. But honestly, Mr. Trump, I find it quite rich that you would talk about this. You know, there are a lot of us Americans who believe that we are going to have trouble someday paying back the interest on our debt because politicians have run up mountains of debt using other people's money. That is, in fact, precisely the way you ran your casinos. You ran up mountains of debt as well as losses using other people's money, and you were forced to file for bankruptcy not once.
I never filed
for twice,
bankruptcy.
Four times, a record four times. Why should we trust you to manage the finances of this nation any differently than you manage the finances of your casinos?
Carly, Mr. Trump.
I've made over $10 billion. I had a casino company. Caesars just filed for bankruptcy. Chris will tell you, it's not Chris's fault either. But almost everybody in Atlantic City is either in trouble or filed for maybe I'll blame Chris.
Well,
but Atlantic City is a disaster. Wait a minute, Carly. Wait, I let you speak. Atlantic City is a disaster, and I did great in Atlantic City. I knew when to get out, my timing was great, and I got a lot of credit for it. Many of the great business people that you know, and Carl Icahn's going to work with me on making great deals for this country, but whether it's Carl or so many others that we read about all the time,
thank you, Mr.
they
Trump.
Have used the laws of the land, which are the
best. Thank you, Mr. Trump.
Well, quite an exchange. We'll talk about it after the break. I will give you a chance to call in as well. Let me know who you think won the debate. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Right back after this. Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Who do you think won the debate? Did you even watch it? Did you get tired of it after a while? It was a very, very long debate. In my view, Carly Fiorina won the debate. I say this not as a fan of hers, to be sure, based totally on debate points, on style points. In fact, she got a number of things wrong. One point she said that it required two-thirds of the states to amend the Constitution. Hey, Carly, it's three-quarters. I think knowing the Constitution is pretty important for a president. At another time, she claimed that she saw a live beating a fetus with its arms and legs kicking, and they kept it alive in order to steal its brain. That's not true. That can't happen. That would be a crime, frankly. You can't deliver a baby and then kill it. So she got a number of things wrong, but she wasn't called on it, and I think her polls are going to go up. My question for you is who do you think won the debate and whether or not Jeb Bush fell asleep? It's interesting because Donald Trump has been calling him the low-energy candidate all along, and he seemed to show, well, not that much energy. Some jokes were made about it. We'll play some more clips later on. But it seemed that the only applause line of significance that Jeb Bush got is when he said that George Bush kept us safe. Really? George Bush kept us safe? I seem to recall, weren't there 3,000 Americans murdered under George Bush's watch on September 11th, 2001? Not so sure that that would be an applause line to a general American audience. We're going to come back with Jeb Bush. We're going to come back with your calls. I also want to talk about the kiddie table debate that occurred, where I actually think Lindsey Graham did a good job. I want to hear from you. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back right after this. Talking about the Republican debate last night, I don't know how much you saw of it. I watched all 3 hours of it. In fact, I watched a lot of the beginning debate as well. I watched, so you don't have to. I would say it was amusing in the first hour or so. Donald Trump got all his his quips in, and a number of people gave it back to him, and it was sort of a good fight. But, It kind of droned on after that, and what I didn't hear too much of was policy. Lots of talk about immigration, that's for sure, but what about climate change? What about economic insecurity, the fact that so many Americans are working harder and falling farther behind? What about the fact that, well, our unemployment level is low. It's down to 5%. Inflation is low. And that other than income inequality, which is a huge deal for Democrats, the economy is going really well. As I said, no mention, barely a mention of climate change, no mention or very little mention of U.S. gun laws. What is important to the Republicans and therefore who won the debate? I believe Jeff from Arizona on line three is a Republican. You'll correct me if you're wrong, Jeff. Did you see the debate, and who do you think won?
Yeah, I watched like 2.5 hours of it. Toward the end there, it got real, you know, tiring, but...
Yeah, it got old after a while. It was a very long debate.
Well, I thought CNN did a lot better job than Fox. As far as the questions thrown and the other candidates then confronting each other, I thought that was good. But I guess with Trump, I'm a definite Trump supporter at this point, because if he wouldn't have got in the race, I wouldn't even vote for this coming 16. I'm not going to vote. Now, if he doesn't get the nomination, I'm not going to throw my hat in. So unfortunately on that, because there's just no one. I might consider Fiorina, but I don't think she could beat Hillary Clinton.
If Donald Trump and Carly Fiorina, if neither of them win the nomination, if it's a conventional politician, Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, one of those, Chris Christie, you will not vote? Is that your decision?
Yes. Yeah, I will not participate and vote for Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or anybody else. I think Trump is definitely going to be the nomination, not the nominee. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that I can see to come up from behind him and take the nomination. I just don't see it.
What is it about Donald Trump?
But I could be wrong.
That appeals to you so much, as opposed to a governor, or a sitting governor or senator, who, after all, has had to look at budgets and make real choices about policies, whomever they are. I mean, Kasich or Christie or you know, even Ted Cruz and Rand Paul have had to.
Right.
What is it about a non-politician that attracts you so much?
You know, I think I'm sick and tired of the governors and the senators getting up there. They haven't proven to me to have a very good track record in the past 12 years as a very ultra conservative myself. But with Donald Trump, I can say this. He is, he's unconventional. He hasn't held office, so that's very appealing. I think he's got some things I agree with him, like a one payer. He is for one payer, even though he hasn't given a lot of detail on it. He is for one
payer. You're talking about a single-payer health care system, universal health care.
Right. He wants to cover everybody with a basic health care. I think that's good for every American. I don't see a problem, even though I'm very more conservative than anybody on that panel. But that's running
that's
right
really,
now.
Wait, hang on. This is really interesting for me. We'll get back to the debate in a second. I find it really interesting that you can consider yourself more conservative than anyone up there on that stage, and yet you support universal health care, which some would say is a very liberal or even socialist thing. I support universal health care, too. You and I agree on this. But it's interesting because most conservatives don't consider that part of a conservative agenda. Why do you think you differ from your fellow conservatives on this?
I just don't think they have it. They have it right. They, if you notice, George Bush has never come out, or the Republican, the Senate and the House, they've never come up with something in the past 12 years, like to say, okay, this is our health care plan. They've never given
that's true. That's
they've never true. Given any detail about it. That's the truth of it all. And so you have to form your own opinions on this. Even though I'm conservative, I still look at them as a total failure I mean, Barack Obama, I don't agree with, but at least, I mean, in his principles, he got something done, and he got it through, even though I don't agree with it. But I could say that the conservatives right now, like I say, that's why people my age between 48, I'm 52, so white male, 52, between 48 and 60, I would say that Trump is going to get that all that block of people, if he's the nominee, he's going to get 20% of blacks, and he's going to get 20 to 25% Hispanics, and that's all he needs. He doesn't need 40% Hispanics. He doesn't
I'll tell you,
need,
I disagree
he's
with
get
you
more
about
black votes than any Republican that has ever gotten him, in my opinion. He's going to get 15 to 20% black vote.
I disagree with your political analysis, but I am very interested in just your policies and what you support. The one candidate who clearly supports universal care, of course, is Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont that's running against Hillary Clinton. I'm curious to know why you consider yourself an ultra-conservative. What are you ultra-conservative on? Is it abortion that's your big issue? Is it guns, gay rights, economic inequality? What other things are you very conservative on?
Okay, I'll just tell you, I'm not for gay marriage. I'm not for gay unions, and I'm not for gays adopting children. I'm not for abortion, and no exceptions. Any case, doesn't matter what it is.
Are you an evangelical in any matter? Jeff, are you an evangelical? Is this come out of a religious belief?
No, I'm not an evangelical. No, absolutely not. I am a independent. I am a believer. I'm religious, but I'm not an evangelical. Absolutely not. And I have a lot of evangelical people I know, and a lot of Catholics I know. But I don't. And then on gun rights, of course, I'm a Second Amendment all the way. You and I have talked about this before, but.
Right.
Second Amendment all the way with no restrictions. Now, look, I'm willing to compromise on a few things, but those
that you think
principles
the
I will not.
In deciding who to marry. Get in there and decide our most intimate choices, not take away our guns if we're violent, if we commit felonies and all, let us have our guns, that you think that the government should be regulating love but not violence. I think the government should be regulating violence and not love, because I think when you harm someone else, that is government's role, and when you love someone else, that's something government should stay out of. So it's just fascinating, that distinction that you and I have. It's different there.
Yeah, we have a distinction. I think you and I, you know, can come to some agreement on a few areas, I think. But I think the basis of your beliefs are a lot different than mine. I come from I believe in a creator, and we're created in God's image. I don't know if you believe that or not, but if you don't, then
I
come from that perspective, but like I said, it doesn't. If you don't believe that, that's fine.
But I tell you what I believe in, Jeff. I believe in live and let live. I think as long as someone's not harming anybody else, let people do whatever they want. And as far as I'm concerned, when you have committed a string of felonies and you've raped someone, then you are harming someone else, and therefore you shouldn't get a gun. But if you love someone and want to live with them and want equal rights under the law, you're not harming anybody. So for me, I want government in there to stop people from harming people. I don't want government in there to stop people from loving people. I just don't think that's government's role. Church can say whatever it wants. Church can do whatever it wants. Religion can do whatever it wants. But I don't want my government telling me who to love. I just don't think that's really their business.
Let me ask you a question. Why do you then... You argue, you know, Democrats argue one point that we don't want government in our business. We love one another. But they want government to tell, they want the government, if the Supreme Court agrees with them, that's fine. So they want the government to get involved, the Supreme Court. But then on the other hand, it's a contradiction because on other stuff, then if you don't agree with that, then, you know, then you don't, you want the government not to be involved. So,
well, I'll tell you, for me,
I mean, is it, do you want the government to be involved, or you don't want
it? I'll tell you what, it depends on the issue, and I go by the Constitution. If it's a question of equality under the law, if it's a question of the government treating some people better than others, only letting whites vote and not letting blacks vote, only letting heterosexuals marry and not letting gay people marry, if the government is saying that men should get paid more than women, if the government, or private employers say that. In other words, if people are being treated unequally under the law, then I think the 14th Amendment to the Constitution says, nope, you got to treat people equally under the law. That's when you need government to be involved. If you're polluting the lake or the river, well, again, that affects everybody. It's not just your private pond. It's the river. It flows downstream. I don't want your pollutants in my river. I don't want your pollutants in the air that I breathe, then the government needs to be involved. But if it's something that you do entirely of yourself, if you choose to join a certain church, or choose to read a certain book, or choose to love a certain person, or choose to tattoo something on your own body, or even choose to use drugs that I think are probably harmful to you, but you're not harming anybody else, then I think government needs to stay out of it. I think government needs to stay out of choices that don't affect other people, but I think government should get in there and protect us when people do things that harm others. The way I like to see it, this is my basic political philosophy, I have the right to throw my arms around as much as I want and do a crazy, stupid dance, no matter how dumb I look. But the minute my fists get close to your face, government needs to come in and protect you so I don't hit you. I have the right to do whatever I want for myself. I don't have the right to harm others. That's my political philosophy. Doesn't that make sense to you?
Yeah, I guess that does make sense. If that's your, you know,
it is. That's my basic operating principle. Right. I want government in there because I don't want somebody polluting my air or my water or hitting me in the face. But if people are polluting themselves or loving other people or reading, I don't care if someone looks at, you know, pornography. It's not my business. Child pornography is different because it harms children. But to the extent that people are doing things that don't harm others, I don't think there's a government role.
Well, abortion harms the baby and it harms women. And
right. So abortion
is society.
Abortion is a tricky one because it all comes down to what you think a fetus is. Whether you think it's a potential life.
You mean a baby? A baby,
well,
right?
You call it a baby. At one point when it's an embryo, it's a single cell. You know, it's a sperm and an egg. Are they half babies? You know, I don't know when it should start. I do know this. I do think that because a woman is required to have a child, because we can't make a baby matrix style in little pods, then I don't think we can require a woman to use her body in a way she doesn't want to use her body for. And once a baby can live outside the womb, that's a different story. But at the moment, we just can't make babies without women.
Well, I have medical science on my part on this one, on the baby, than people that are not pro-life. I'm not saying you're not pro-life. I'm saying is the Supreme Court has said that states are allowed to restrict abortions on many, many points. And we have done that. We've restricted women from killing the babies over the past long time, you know, but past 5 years. And the Supreme Court has said we could do that. And we've closed abortion clinics all over Texas
and all over the
South.
You're not quite
and
right,
we've
Jeff.
Restricted abortions, and that's good.
Well,
and
Jeff,
I'm happy
Jeff,
with
the
that,
Supreme Court
but
has
it's
said,
not enough.
Jeff, the Supreme Court has said that when a fetus is viable, which is in the second or most often the third trimester, that states can put some limited restrictions on abortions, but they cannot restrict abortions where they're done to protect the life or health of the mother. That's the current Supreme Court law. In other words, in the first trimester, you really can't stop any abortions, according to the Supreme Court. This is Roe v. Wade. In the last trimester, people understand that once a fetus can live outside the mother, then unless it's going to affect the mother's life or health, that's a different situation. And that actually kind of makes intuitive sense to me, because the whole problem with not allowing a woman to choose whether or not she's going to have a child or not is that it's the woman. It's her body. I don't think we have a federal right to require a woman to do with her body what she doesn't want to do with it. But You can't ban abortions, at least not under current law, not in the first trimester, only in the very later stages where it doesn't affect a woman's life or health.
Right, and the last point on the abortion real quick was that even the Chief Justice that decided it, it was a 7-2 decision. I believe Rehnquist and White dissented, and the Republicans went with the liberals on this. But the Chief of the Supreme Court did say in that decision, if I could remember it right, said that if you can give me an argument that this is a life, give me some evidence, give me some things back in 72. And what happened was we had nobody to argue that case right, and that's why we lost. We had people just ridiculously making some kind of arguments that the Chief Justice could not say, well, I can't, go for that one. But he did say, if you could give me an argument for that. I think we have one right now.
I'll tell you
my
argument.
Strong one. And I don't think in my lifetime it maybe will get back there. I'm not sure.
I don't think it will,
Jeff. I hope so, but I don't have any.
I'll say this. Abortion is one of those issues that it's virtually impossible to persuade anyone on. I am pro-choice. I understand people, particularly those with religious sensibilities, who are not. I will tell you this. As a legal matter, it's a constitutional matter. The 14th Amendment says you have certain rights once you're born, and the word is born. It doesn't say conceived. And obviously there have been some suggestions by some to change the Constitution. But as far as I'm concerned, until you're born, you just don't have the full rights and immunities of a citizen of the United States. And so as a legal matter, I don't think you're going to win the argument. As a moral matter, Americans are going to be arguing about abortion from now for certainly, I think, a century to come. Thanks, Jeff, for sharing with me all your views today. I really do appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time. We're going to get back to more of the debate and more callers at 888-488-MARK, 488-6275. I don't think I'm going to finish today, but that's okay. I've got all tomorrow to talk about the debate as well. There's a lot of things to talk about. And listen, sometimes I just appreciate your calling in and discussing your views. Give me insight into what other people are thinking. I think Jeff from Arizona, though I don't agree with him, has some very interesting views. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this. The Republican debate tomorrow. Lots more to talk about, specifically about the Jeb Bush. He admitted to having smoked marijuana. That was an interesting discussion. He also defended his brother, saying that he kept us safe. Actually got an applause line on that one, though I'm not so sure that most Americans agree with what most Republicans in the room think about with regard to George W. Bush. And a fascinating exchange between Jeb Bush and Donald Trump on casinos that Donald wanted to build in Florida. All of that on tomorrow's show, including hopefully a few clips even from the pre-debate, the kiddie table debate. So stay tuned tomorrow for that. Before then, I do want to get to Reggie's been holding on a very long time from Georgia. Hey, Reggie, how are you?
How are you, man? Happy Thursday to you there, Mark.
Happy Thursday. Who do you think won the debate?
Really, nobody, because I didn't watch the debate. Did you have any caffeine with you for those 3 hours?
I'll tell you, the last hour was hard to sit through. It was fun when they were all zinging each other, but after a while they just bored me, I have to admit.
Yes, but, it's like a bunch of, college kids.
Rand Paul compared it to junior high, where everyone is, talking about how everyone else looks. So there were a lot of zingers, and it was, as a Democrat, I do enjoy a little bit of the circular firing squad, but then it just got boring at the end. But hey, I watch Reggie, so you don't have to. You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you, man. And like I said, nobody won because I didn't watch it because I was on my laptop all day and night yesterday, as I usually am every day.
Well, that's okay.
So I can listen to shows like yours and Leslie's and Stephanie's and the rest of them.
Well, I appreciate that, Reggie. And listen, next month we've got the Democratic debate, And I guarantee you I will give that all the coverage I've given to the Republicans. Thanks for your call, Reggie. Thank you for your call, too, Jeff. I always appreciate when people whom I don't agree with call. Gives me a lot of insight into the way other Americans think. This is Mark Levine. Follow me on Twitter @MarkLevineTalk. My website's MarkLevineTalk.com. And I will talk to you tomorrow.